Psalm 142 says at the start of the psalm, a contemplation by David when he was in the cave, a prayer. Well, the titles of the psalms are inspired, and a couple of them are actually quoted as scripture in the New Testament. And I think we should treat them as inspired. And in some versions of the Bible, you will find that the verses are apparently one verse out when it comes to comparing them, that version, with, for example, the King James. And that's because the first verse is the title of the psalm. It's treated as verse 1. So, this is a contemplation by David when he was in the cave. You'd remember he was being hunted by Saul. He went into a very deep cave, hid in the cave, and while he's hiding in there, Saul and his men come and sleep in the mouth of the cave. So it really seemed that he was absolutely trapped. Now, this, I presume, was written up by David under inspiration after he had had this experience. He's remembering and writing it up. You remember he had the opportunity to kill Saul, but he didn't. He says, verse 1, I cry with my voice to Yahweh, with my voice I ask Yahweh for mercy. Well, I guess being where he was in the cave, deep inside the cave, and Saul and his men sleeping in the mouth of the cave, it would have been imperative to keep absolutely silent. And they must have just crept out from inside the cave and realized what was happening and realized, hang, that's Saul and his men. And yet here he says, I cried really loudly to Yahweh with my voice. Well, clearly enough, that was inside his heart. And he asked Yahweh for mercy. How true that is, that when you're in a no-exit situation like that and you beg God for his help, for deliverance, you are struck with a sense of your sin. Who am I? I need mercy. He asks God for mercy, not simply deliverance, but for mercy. So even at that point in his life, this is before he'd sinned with Bathsheba, he has this sense that he is a sinner. And you see that in Psalm 119, which I think was also written whilst he was on the run from Saul. And how true is that to life, that we do have that sense of our sinfulness and our need for his mercy when we're forced by circumstance to throw ourselves upon God for his salvation. And that is good. And that is one reason, I suppose, we have these crises in our lives, to convict us of our sin, to remind us that even if we've dealt with our sin, well, we were still historically shown mercy. And that gives us that appropriate humility, which is so important to God. Verse 2, I pour out my complaint before him. That's a poor translation. Literally, I gush out my babbling. He was so overwhelmed that he was, as it were, babbling to God in prayer. And yet he says that I do this before him, before Yahweh. Well, being before Yahweh is very much the language of coming into the sanctuary, being before his representatives, before the priest or the tabernacle. And yet here in the heart of a cave, he comes to know that absolute presence of Yahweh. And you see that often in these psalms at this time, this part of his life. He feels that he is, for example, located beneath the wings of the cherubim, which were over the ark, in the most holy place. He feels that that's where he is. And again, this is why you have difficulties in your life, to make you realize that you are absolutely in the presence of God, even when you are away from any religious structure. And this, again, was one of the aspects in what he was going through. But there in the heart of the earth, just like Jonah in the belly of the great fish, he felt God's presence. And we all go through this in different ways to help us to realize this, that God is not just present in the church building, at the meeting, or however you put it, in your particular sort of religious system that you're in as a Christian, regularly going to church, which is all well and good stuff. But the point is that God is not only there. God is more essentially present with you alone in your darkest and most personal hours. I tell him my troubles, verse 2. Well, although God knows our exact position in life better than we know ourselves, it is all part of childlike trusting him to tell him all our troubles. So, of course, he told God his situation. And as I say, although God obviously knows that, I think that is part of prayer. And when you read David's Psalms, his prayers right through, you will see that there's not actually that many requests. Please do this for me. Please do that. That is a very primitive and immature conception of prayer, that prayer is asking God for things. A lot of prayer that you have in the Psalms, and as it should be in our lives, is us discussing with God, is us opening our lives before him. And this is so helpful for you to explain to God your feelings and to explain to God your situation. It is, if you like, therapeutic. Of course, God knows. And yet, as you go through those issues with him, you are aware, of course, that he knows. And yet, as you talk through your situation, that sense that he knows and that sense of his presence becomes all the greater. Verse 3, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, when I said in verse 2 that David felt that he had to gush out my babbling to God, he feels like a distressed, very small child. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, you knew my path. Well, as I say, this is David reflecting afterwards on what happened in the cave and his feelings. And he saw that that crisis, being in the cave in an apparently no-exit situation, was all the same part of his journey. He now sees that you knew my path, that this too shall pass, and that he had to pass through that as part of his journey. In the way in which I walk, they have hidden a snare for me. Well, he says that very often in Psalm 119, that he felt that Saul was really trying to trap him, and maybe through getting him to marry his daughters, and thereby seeking to kill him, and all that kind of thing. Verse 4, look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who's concerned for me. Refuge has fled from me, no one cares for my soul. Well, he was not alone in the cave, he had his men with him. But he looked to them, and his conclusion was, there's no one who is concerned for me, no one cares for my soul. He must have thought, well, are they going to fight their way out of here, or are they going to betray me? It's going to be a lot easier for them to betray me, because that is who, I'm the one whom Saul wants, not them. And so he felt isolated from his men. Now, they didn't actually do that, but that was how he felt, and they were his fears, and he brings that to God. Verse 5, I cried to you, Yahweh. Now, as I said earlier, he was there in the cave. It was absolutely critical to be as silent as possible. But in his heart, he's crying, screaming almost to God. I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Well, he'd made the cave his refuge. And now he realizes that my human, secular attempt at a refuge is in fact my trap. And you now, I understand, are my refuge. And you can distill from that a very powerful little point, that often what you seek to use as your human strength, as your human refuge, often goes wrong, badly wrong, and it makes you more strongly understand that God alone is your refuge. You may put your life savings into some get-rich-quick scheme. You may try to take shortcuts in your secular life, and it goes badly wrong. You trust in an insurance policy, you trust in a pension scheme, and it goes wrong. And that is intentional. That's not God being cruel. That's so that you make him your refuge. Verse 6, listen to my cry. Again, he's being as silent as he could in the cave, but in his heart he's crying to God. Listen to my cry. I'm in desperate need. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they're stronger than me. He knew that there was no way he could fight his way out of the cave. They were deep inside the cave. Saul and his men were in the mouth of the cave, and he was in desperate need. He could not see a way out. His way was blocked. by Saul. But he doesn't give up hope. I think many would have just given up. But instead, he still begs God to help him. And this is why these desperate situations happen in our lives, when all human strength and help is removed, and we are left absolutely trusting in God alone. That is why these things happen. Verse 7, bring my soul out of prison. He felt that that cave was his prison, which it was, of course. He could not get out. It was dark and with no way out. And he says, bring my soul out of prison, that I may give thanks to your name. And that's what he's now doing. He's now writing up his psalms of praise. That was his desire, save me, not just so that I can go on living a bit longer, but so that I may praise you. The righteous will surround me, for you will be good to me. Well, he doesn't feel he's surrounded by the righteous, because he doesn't trust his own men. He says earlier in the psalm, nobody cares for my soul. I look to the guys on my right hand, that is those I should be able to trust in, and they don't care. But one day, I will be surrounded not by them, but by the righteous. You will do good to me. And I think he is thinking there of the prophetic word to him that one day he would be king. He thought of dear old Samuel, and he focuses his faith upon those simple words. Just like when Joseph was in prison, we're told in the Psalm 105, I think, the word of the Lord tried him. In other words, he was tested as to whether he would keep on believing in that word of promise that then seemed so unlikely that one day his father and his brothers would bow down to him. And so it is with us, that we have received that word of promise that one day you and I shall be king priests and we shall reign on the earth. One day this world will be ours and we shall live forever. But we who feel so strongly our mortality, knowing that I've only got a limited time left on this earth, I am so weak, spiritually weak, physically weak, how can this be for me? Well, little me, how can I? But there seems such a disconnect between little me now and who I shall eternally be. And yet, this is, for us, our faith in God's word of promise, just as it was for David. Deep inside the cave, with Saul and his men blocking the exit, there they were in the mouth of the cave. It seemed absolutely impossible, but he clings on to this word of promise. You will be good to me.